You know, it's so nice when we get together and share our thoughts, and particularly when we share our thoughts about the road to eternity. When we get to talk about the souls that's gone on that road ahead, we can talk easily about the ones, the road that we've been over. But you know, we really don't know exactly what's down the road ahead. But you know, there's a story that that somebody sent me on the email that said we're not sure, and exactly what's on the road ahead. But we know that we're going. And as I think you just said, sir, that you know we're all going to do it someday. We're all going to step forward a little further down the path on the road to eternity, huh? Not what you just said, more or less. So it's nice to think about it, and it's nice to share your thoughts about it. And that's what I believe that our Barbara is going to do for us tonight, is share her thoughts. That's our Barbara.
To just kind of paraphrase Millie, what she just said, I'm not sure what's on the talk ahead, but I'm going to start talking. Is that in anybody's eye? Okay. It's Easter week, and I spoke at the Sunday church two Sundays ago, and I talked a little bit about. Let's move this. I talked about Christ the night before he was turned over and to the Romans, his last night of prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. And then on this past Sunday, my healing meditation as well as Lindy's talk was about Palm Sunday. And Lindy, is she here tonight? Oh, okay. But she did a great job of talking about how when on Palm Sunday, Christ rode in on a donkey into Jerusalem, and it was a moment where he could be in his full glory, and she invited all of us to kind of look inside and find our own personal joy and our own personal glory and our own self-worth. And what I want to talk to you about tonight is those moments that we read about in Luke where Christ is up on the cross, and on either side of him are the two criminals, the two thieves who are also facing their death at that same time. And I'm going to quote a little bit from Luke first. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at Christ. "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him, meaning he rebuked the other thief. "Don't you fear God, since you are under the same sentence? We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said to Jesus, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus answered him, "I tell you the truth. Today you will be with me in paradise." And so here we have Christ in the center and these two men who are also facing their death. And they have this opportunity to choose to have faith in God or not to. And in this spiritual community, we talk a lot about checking and testing and not believing blindly. But at the same time, there is this act of faith where you can't always prove scientifically these things that we believe. You can't prove the existence of love in a chemistry lab. But we know love to be real. We have other examples of it that might not hold up to scientific scrutiny. And we take those other examples of love on an act of faith because we know in our own selves, in our own hearts, that it is real. And so here were these two men, and they had this moment where one chose to take that leap of faith that this man next to him, Jesus Christ, really was onto something, and the other one just opted to stay stuck, if you will, in his own dismay and anger and his own path, life path, that was destructive. And faith is often hidden, and it's often hard to discover. We can turn over rocks, and sometimes we just see bugs, but sometimes we find these wonderful examples of God working through angels here on earth, trying to show us examples of love. And going back to Luke, after that little exchange between the three men occurred, Christ said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And he wasn't just referring to the two men on either side of him. He was referring to the crowd below who were calling for his death. And he was coming out of this place of being almost a position of humiliation with people calling for his death, and yet out of love he was saying, "Forgive them." And, you know, the whole notion of forgiveness is really along, I think it's kind of like the twin sister, if you will, of love, that the two, loving another person and forgiving another person, are kind of opposite sides of the same coin, and both necessary in order to really develop real relationships with one another. The forgiveness one is a hard one, though. And oftentimes it's the people we love the most who let us down that then we really struggle with forgiving. It's sometimes much easier to forgive someone who's at a distance, not as closely tied to us in terms of our own personal well-being and our hearts. Skipping this page. While Christ was still walking and preaching during his 3 years of life, his greatest commandment was to love one another. And he also said to love God with all your mind and your heart and your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And again, these words sound so simple and are kind of the most basic truth ever, but putting them into practice can be very, very difficult. I have a neighbor who's going through a really hard time right now, and through a series of events, including her own, her husband left her, she's losing her home, she got breast cancer, family members died of breast cancer, and now she's been drinking, and she's bordering on mental illness, and now her son's been taken away. And all of the neighbors are watching her slip into this madness, and they're looking at me like, "Well, I don't understand." And I'm like, "It's an illness. You know, you would have no problems having compassion for her if we just said she had the cancer. But because they don't understand her swings and moods and her suicide attempts, and they're frustrated, and the way she's driving erratically when she shouldn't be down our little street, putting children at risk, the anger and the unwillingness to reach out to her with compassion is almost palpable among my neighbors. And it's hard. It's real easy for me even to say, you know what, I can't take care of her either because I've got all of these things on my plate right now. Even I am saying to myself, I'm at my limit. And yet, right across from my kitchen window is this woman crying out in need. And Christ is asking all of us to go to those people who are in need, who are but a mere reflection of ourselves at our own weakest times. And he calls on us to love with our mind and our heart and our strength. So at the times that we do have the strength is the time we're called to walk across the driveway and give someone else some of our own strength. Easter, indifferent of the traditions, if we look at the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church tradition, I remember as a kid this was obviously a long time ago, and I'm not sure if it's still the same, but when I was a kid, on Good Friday, all the Catholic kids got Friday afternoon from school, but those of us who were Protestants, our religion wasn't as, I don't know what word would be right, but our religion didn't push for that, and I just felt like, wow, I want to be Catholic. First of all, I wanted that whole communion thing with a cute little white dress and the lace and all that stuff. And then why did they get more time off from school than we did? But, the you know, as a child, and not the temptations, but the other rites of spring that are celebrated along with Easter, and I don't think it's any accident, I'm sure Millie has talked the same way, it's no accident that we celebrate Easter and the whole idea of renewal, rebirth, just as nature is going through that rebirth cycle as well. We come off of winter, things are dormant, and they come back to life. We think of Easter as being one day on our calendar every single year, and yet Easter can be thought of as a verb. Easter can be thought of as this opportunity we have on a daily basis to renew ourselves, to resurrect ourselves, to come into a place of forgiveness and kind of our greatest opportunity to shine as God would want us to shine every single day. We can make the decision every day in our hearts to overcome the crucifixion, if you will. One of the men on Christ's side just chose to not believe, to just believe that there was death and his life was over and that was the end. And at times we can all feel like that, but we can also choose when we're in those depths of despair to see beyond that and choose the resurrection, to choose the Easter in our own hearts. I wanted to give you a little example from my life. One of the things I'm obsessing about right now is my garden, and I talked about that a couple weeks ago, but some of you know that gardening has kind of been a new passion for about 6 or 8 years now, and right now my garden is scheduled to be on a tour in about 6 weeks, the middle of May, the Mission Hills Garden Tour, and I'm told that 1,700 people are going to be marching through my yard on a Saturday. And I agreed to this last summer thinking, oh, that's a long way off. Now it's 6 weeks away, and I am obsessing about every little piece of grass that shouldn't be wherever it lands. Every little brown leaf on a plant, I'm out there on a daily basis running after. And if you were to see I have a little house and a little yard, and think of my house as a little square, and on three sides are what the public will see. On the fourth side, there's two fences that block kind of the little backyard, and the backyard is total chaos. Total chaos. I mean, I'm spending every free moment that I have working on these three sides, and then the empty pots and the mud and the extra rocks, everything is just dumped in this fourth side. And on these gates, I have these little cutouts in the shape of sailboats. And so if somebody were to walk up here and look through the sailboats, they could see the chaos. So I've already planned the morning of the garden tour. I'm putting up paper so they can't see the fourth side of my house. And I use this metaphor because I think all of us have public sides. We have what we allow the world to see, and then we have the skeletons. We have the backyard that only we know how bad it really is, or we have the closet where the laundry basket's spilling over, or we have... we all have these corners of our life that we think are out of sight and nobody's going to judge us on. And I think it's those corners that, first of all, God already knows about, but that God calls us to bring for discussion and prayer. It's like my neighbor. Her yard looks pretty good too. all things considered, that she's been going through in her more manic phases, she's across the driveway from me on the garden tour, and so she's feeling this pressure like hers should look kind of good too. And yet, this other side of her that's going into mental illness is what she needs to bring to God. And I have those things I need to bring to God, and so do you. And I feel like Easter is a time for all of us to just kind of reflect on what we keep hidden and what it is we normally are too embarrassed to talk about with God, and yet God already knows. And God is love, and God is forgiveness. And I think by bringing these things to God in prayer, that we can start to heal those areas. We can start to clean up the messes in my backyard and just really come to a place of having that beauty that is this life experience shine on all sides of ourselves. I can't see the clock. Okay. Kind of the last thing I want to do, I subscribe to a magazine called The Sun, and one reason I love it is because it doesn't have ads, which is kind of ironic because I work for a newspaper and we're all about selling ads. But the one page they always have every issue is just a list of little quotes, and they're all kind of gathered on a certain theme. And in the issue that arrived yesterday, it fit in perfectly with kind of where my mind has been. So I'm just going to share a couple quotes with you. First one's from Abraham Lincoln. "I have been driven many times to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I had nowhere else to go." And I think that's a human experience. You know, we try and do so much on our own that it's only when we're completely overwhelmed and completely helpless that we finally realize, God, I'm going to go to God, when God and the angels were always there to help us anytime. We could have asked much earlier. Here's a quote from Jimmy Carter. "God answers all of our prayers. Sometimes the answer is yes. Sometimes the answer is no. Sometimes the answer is, you've got to be kidding." And I think that's true too. And again, because God or love is knowing of what is more appropriate for us than we know. And so, yeah, sometimes I'm sure the response back is, you've got to be kidding. There's a gentleman here, Emo Phillips. I'm not familiar with him, but his quote goes like this. "When I was a kid, I used to pray every night for a new bicycle. Then I realized that the Lord doesn't work that way, so I stole one and asked for forgiveness." Now, I don't recommend that. But here's a great one from Frederick Douglass. "I prayed for 20 years but received no answer until I prayed with my legs." And I really, that one fits in really well, I think, because so much of creating action in our lives isn't simply about asking, but it's also about doing, which is what God is calling us to do. He's asking us to love one another. He's asking us to forgive one another. And he's asking us to get up and use the talents we've been given, whether it's our legs, our minds, our ability to work, our ability to help the neighbors and friends and family members who all have needs. He's asking us to share that strength with one another. A woman named Barbara Harrison writes, "Sometimes I think that just not thinking of oneself is a form of prayer." Again, sometimes we're called to put aside our own needs and tap into that other part of the greater whole that is God and think of someone else. Soren Kierkegaard, I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but said, "As my prayer becomes more attentive and inward, I had less and less to say. I finally became completely silent. This is how it is. To pray does not mean to listen to oneself speaking. Prayer involves becoming silent and being silent and waiting until God is heard." And I think certainly what we practice here, although we don't tell one another to be silent, is that we do try and impart to all of you that God is speaking to all of us. And sometimes we do have to quiet the clutter in our minds and turn off the TV and the cell phones in order to hear that voice that's within. And lastly, Leonard Cohen says, if you don't become the ocean, you'll be seasick every day. And I take you back to that image of Christ on the cross and the two thieves. And, you know, one of them chose to be the ocean with Christ and chose to just let go and have that faith. And the other one opted not to and stayed in that place of seasickness. And we believe ultimately after all of those men made their transition that certainly there was another transformation into another life. But all of us today have that choice of choosing to become part of the ocean or to choosing to stay with that seasickness. And I encourage all of you to become a part of the ocean. Thank you for this time.